Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome everybody to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May, and I hope everyone is having a good Wednesday so far. It's 10:30 here on the Eastern Time, East Coast, and very excited to say that I have on the show with me today Dr. Mark Rasik. Doctor, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well. It's good to have you here. This is a first part of about a five-part series that we'll be doing with Dr. Rasik. And Dr. Rasik, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, I know that you're a cardiologist, obviously, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Yes, I am a cardiologist. I actually was born and raised in Michigan, and other than my rotations, did not leave southeastern Michigan. My dad, a family practitioner in the area, was always very engaged with his patients and had a very large private practice. And I used to go to work with him and kind of get to know his patients and how he did things. And before I knew it, I was working with him in med school.
Very nice. So the healthcare industry was in your blood.
Oh, yeah. Weaned on it.
That's great. So would you say then, obviously, that your dad was probably a major influence over your life?
Oh, absolutely.
Great. That's
his
great.
His patients loved him.
What was it about what he did that that really, you know, said that this is what you want? What made you feel like that?
You know, I think the way the patients bonded with him, his extended mm-hmm. family, just the way he cared for them, and when they felt well after he fixed their problems, very grateful, it was just ingrained in our lives. It was just nice to see, and I wanted to be part of that.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I know for myself, you know, I've been to a couple different doctors here and there, and I've actually found someone finally that you do trust. It's like you feel a heck of a lot better going to somebody that you can just bond with in that way.
Absolutely.
And so how did you pursue, you know, your degrees and, you know, getting the background and the education that you needed?
Well, I, you know, was a bit precocious, so I managed to get through school a little bit faster than somebody my age. So I knew that it was going to be a long haul for medicine and managed to finish up high school by 16 and college by 18. So it was a little bit of a challenge trying to get a med school to accept an 18-year-old entry. So
I can
that
imagine.
That was a little bit of a challenge. But through work experience, volunteering, working in the hospital, working with some of my dad's friends, I was able to accumulate enough sort of experience that the mm-hmm. Med schools were able to give us a try. And so I was able to start med school around age 19 and kind of took off from there.
Wow. So how old were you, you know, ready to go to practice on your own then?
You know, I was probably 23 when I finished med school, and then by 24 I had a license that theoretically could have gone out and practiced.
Oh, wow. That's that's pretty ridiculous, considering everybody else, you know, their path is a little longer than that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a long road, so I wanted to get to what I wanted and loved as fast as I could.
Sure, sure. So what were some of the best memories and favorite moments that you had while you were going to college and, you know, earning your degree and really figuring out, you know, that this was definitely what you want? Were there anything that kind of stood out in your mind, professors or moments or such?
Well, as you can imagine, college was a little bit of a blur, but med school...
Sure.
Was when you had your first chance and opportunity to treat patients in the clinics, to really hear their stories. And as med students tend to do, we spend a lot of time with the patients compared to sort of the average attending. So to hear their stories, to hear what they've been through, and a few of the patients became very close. And you would get letters, birthday cards, and you know, it was a neat experience to just kind of know them, bond with them, understand where they came from, and be able to take care of some of their issues. And even if it's just chronic pain management, I think there's no job in the world that does that.
Right, absolutely. So why was it cardiology that you specifically chose?
Right. My father being the wise man he was, did not necessarily want me to follow his footsteps into the primary care. He felt that he worked too many hours and it was a lot of stress. So he tried to encourage me to something like ophthalmology or something that would still be technically challenging, but maybe a little less work intensive, maybe less a little more lucrative. But when I first started out, I happened to rotate through some of my father's friends who had outpatient practices, and cardiology just sort of seemed to have it all. I mean, one minute you were doing a procedure to save someone's life, and the next minute you were doing dietary consultation, and then we were doing devices. It just seemed to be all-encompassing everywhere from primary to secondary to urgent care, and I wanted something broad-based like that. I didn't want to be sort of locked into something too defined.
Sure, absolutely. And do you specifically work with just adults, or do you work with children as well?
You know, I'll work with teens up. So once they're a teenager, I'm pretty comfortable with that. If it's too complex of a congenital problem, they usually follow with the universities and the larger institutions well into adulthood. But I certainly don't have any problem working with teenagers and up.
That's good to know for people. Now, actually, what I would love to let people know, too, is where do you practice? Is it just a specific hospital or a location?
Well, we're part of the Beaumont Health System in Farmington Hills, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And our group goes to multiple hospitals. So we have staff privileges. In the day, you practice out of one hospital and all your patients came to you. These days, you kind of go where the patients go. So we work out of the Beaumont system. We work out of the Providence St. John system. We work out of the Oakwood. You know, all the different area hospitals we have partners or we go to and help cross cover to see patients. So my office is in Farmington Hills, Michigan.
And where is that located?
About 30 minutes, maybe about 30 minutes outside Detroit.
Oh, okay. That's great. And I mean, I'm assuming that with it being so close to Detroit, it's probably a pretty high traffic area in terms of you know, the clients that you get, or the patients, I'm sorry.
Sure.
So let me ask you this then. In terms of the most common reasons that you're being sought after by people, what are some of the things that you see every day?
Well, one of the things that I think technically am a subspecialist, an interventional cardiologist, is angioplasties, heart cath, the emergent kind of peripheral stuff. But I also do general cardiology, and I have a fair amount of patients, some residual from my father's practice, that I do general
mm-hmm.
medicine. So I take the time with the patients to make sure that I'm not just focusing on their heart, and I try to take the time with them to make sure that nothing non-cardiac may be antagonizing problems. And then I try to make sure that I'm available to my patients. They have my cell phone. They have my email.
Mm-hmm.
My dad always sort of sent the message that if you're not available to your patients, then you're not doing your job. So I'm probably ridiculously accessible at
right.
times. But I think if I treat them like I'd like my own family treated, they tend to be pretty appreciative.
Sure, absolutely. Now, are there things that you thought that a field in medicine would have had that you don't see? Was there any disappointment as far as your career so far?
Well, I think the way things are going in medicine, we're becoming more, the more the government gets involved in anything. We certainly needed to be on the electronic medical record system, which is fine, but now it's getting over-regulated, overburdened, and very redundant. So doctors are spending more time looking at their laptop than they are the patient. It makes it burdensome. It's become like the tax code. Do we really need thousands and thousands of pages of this stuff? And I think that takes away from the patient care.
Sure, sure. I mean, I know from my own experience that I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like they ask you a question and they say, okay, this is how you feel, and then they have to scroll through the laptop, and that's where they get, you know, somewhat of an answer. Which
right.
is kind
and
of
even,
weird for
yeah. I mean, that's silly, right? I mean, we should be
yep.
engaged with the patient, not trying to find
sure.
the right buzzword on a menu. and then the HIPAA agreement, right? When they come in on this, normally that HIPAA agreement is a paragraph, and now they've got it broken down into multiple two-sentence. Like, so you're signing 10, 15 spots, like you're getting a mortgage instead of seeing your doctor.
Right.
I mean, all the written and stuff, it's supposed to be paperless, and they walk out with more paper than they did before. So I think it's well-intentioned, it's well-meaning, but any time you get bureaucracy involved in anything, it tends to just get to be more paper.
Right, absolutely. And now, when you were coming up through medical school, was that there? Were you did you have to learn that system, or was it still more of the question and, you know, just directly working with the patient?
Yeah, no, we had very little. The only thing the computer was for was to pull up some tests in labs. Otherwise, everything was written. You dictated into a dictaphone after they left, but you were writing things down, engaged in the patient. They knew you were there, and
right.
You weren't tied up with an electronic piece of equipment.
Right, very strange. But, I mean, I guess there's a reason why they do it. You would certainly know better as to why. But yeah, for my own... my own experience, I would prefer to not have to look at that.
Right. And I know that, it was meant that this was all going to be shared information and that it would actually improve things, but, you know, it just isn't really materialized to be that way. So in the end, I'm not sure if it's helping or hurting, but it's certainly a poor quality. And I think most of the patients polled have said that they wait longer, harder to get in, and then when they do, they get to talk to someone's profile while they're typing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now, on a daily basis, just for people who, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, have to see a cardiologist because obviously there's something wrong if you do, right?
Sure.
Okay, so when a patient arrives, what do you typically ask them?
Well, they've already been through the process at the front desk. Then they fill out the questionnaire that they're obligated to. Then they come in. Our MA asks very similar questions, which then get re-recorded. So by the time they're sitting and perhaps waiting a bit, because just the check-in process,
mm-hmm.
you know, takes a while, and again, cumulative over the day, so you get a little bit further behind. And if I don't get called down for an emergency angioplasty and put it even further behind, I try to ask the question, you know, why do you think your doctor sent you? Or what is it that you'd like me to do for you today to make you feel better? And then I work backwards from that complaint or from their objective as to what they perceive. Because a lot of times when a busy doctor sends a patient in with the words chest pain on a piece of paper, they don't relate to that. That's not why they're here. They have a different
right.
chest pressure, tightness, burning. So I try to have them put what in their words is the reason they feel that they're there and what can I do to make it better. So we sort of stay on task of what they hope to achieve.
Sure, absolutely. Now, is it simple enough, though, to do that, to gauge what you're dealing with a person simply describing it? I mean, obviously, people have different ways and different, I would say, pain measures as well, right? I mean, if you ask somebody, okay, what's your chest pain like on a level of 1 to 10, and they say it's a 10, but really it might be like an overreactive type thing, does that
right.
challenge you?
You know, it does to a certain degree. The patient that responds, I don't know, when I say, why are you here and what can I do for you? Those are more problematic. When I get a stoic gentleman, because it tends to be the men, I don't know, my doctor sent me. Those are a little more difficult. But the other patients, you know, typically, if you can keep them from wandering too much, if you listen to a patient long enough, they do a pretty good job of telling you what's wrong and where you need to go with your evaluation. And a lot of patients, if they tend to be a little more anxious or over-exaggerate, they tend, I think most doctors, and not that all of it's bad, but they filter out things to the point where maybe they don't get answered what they need to. And if you do listen, a lot of times I pick up things that maybe others may miss.
And for everyone just joining us now, I'm with Dr. Mark Rasek out of Farmington Hills, Michigan. Dr. Rasek, why don't you share, if you'd like to, obviously, any ways of people to get in touch with you if they have any questions or anything like that?
Sure. My email is mrasek, which is R-A-S-A-K, at heartdoctors, and that's D-R-S, not spelled out like doctor. So heartdoctors heartdoctors.com. mrasic@heartdoctors.com.
All right, great. And moving along here, now, good cardio health. Obviously, we think we know the right things to do. And you've seen a lot, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of different things, heard a lot of different stories, people trying this, trying that. You know, what are some of the easiest preventative measures people can do to take care of their heart and their and really their cardio system?
Well, you know, the exercise is key to probably most of the problems because it'll help regulate the rest of the body. In moderate exercise, it doesn't have to be, you know, a full cardio workout or cross training. And that's the problem is patients feel like if they can't go to the gym and do cross training, then they're just not going to do anything at all because it just seems so overwhelming. But really, if they just do a moderate exercise and do it consistently, they'll add years to their lives. I mean, if you do moderate activity 5 to 6 days a week for every hour of exercise, you can add 2 hours to your lifespan. So, you know, and then that in turn burns calories, that in turn reduces the sugars and reduces your insulin, and you begin to keep the weight off. And cardiovascular aerobics is a very powerful preventative agent and an anti-aging agent, too. But we get caught up with, you know, joining gyms, getting the right outfit, and then not showing up.
So what? How long are we saying if it's 5 to 6 times a week? What's a good solid workout for that?
Well, you certainly want to reach at least or approach your target heart rate or some variation of that. You want to be able to work up at least a mild sweat.
Sure.
You know, if you saunter, obviously that won't be enough. You want it to be a good 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to use a target heart rate similar to what you would use during the stress testing, where you take 220, subtract your age, and then we multiply that by 85%, and that should be, you wouldn't want to go much higher than that, and start with that for a while and sort of work your way up. There is no deadline, and that's the other thing is they throw themselves into it, then they hurt their knee or their back. So, you know, you can gradually increase your workout as you tolerate, and even if it's an extra 10 minutes every week, you know, and et cetera. It doesn't have to be as rigid or as aggressive as people think.
Right, absolutely. And now with the workout itself, I know it's good to do the cardio thing, but there's always new studies, and I put that in quotes, that show, you know, the different ways that aren't as effective or these other ways that are hurting your knees, that they're damaging muscles that you shouldn't do. I mean, do you
right.
know particular workouts that people should, that, you know, the foolproof ones, the ones that should just stick out and do what they're supposed to do and not, you know, overdo any part of the body?
Right. So the idea, like everything, is moderation. So when we overwork or do overuse syndrome, we strain knees, we hurt the back. You know, the bikers the really competitive runners all have bad knees and hips, and so really we want the heart to be happy. We don't need to do it to the point where we're hurting our extremities. So that's why picking that moderate heart rate, doing things that if it hurts, you're either doing it wrong or you shouldn't do it. So for me,
right.
I don't like the treadmill. It hurts my knees. The elliptical is far more gentle on my knees, but
sure.
I get my cardio. The swimming pool is almost a perfect exercise. It exercises every body part, and yet you're buoyed and you're not hurting, you know, parts. So those non-traumatic, high energy, those are things that are favorable to the heart.
Favorable to the heart and definitely still effective, obviously, right? I mean, that's what I want the audience to really to know about, because these are things that you can do. And obviously, you know, not everybody has a swimming pool. Not everybody has access to, you know, the elliptical machine or anything like that. And I know for myself, I'm not a gym guy, but what I have done in the past was I purchased these, the Sean T workouts or the DVD workouts,
right.
You know, that let you do things. Now, I got to tell you, it was effective because I did stick with it. And I haven't hurt myself yet doing it, which is good. And it's easier for me to do that because I have more time to simply set aside that 45 minutes, you know, in my basement, we'll say, as opposed to going to the gym. Now, for those things, obviously those are okay to do, right?
Well, right, as long as, again, you listen to your body, because they're like those PX 90s, you know, they have some crazy stuff in it. So you got to realize, and even they say in these things, you know, you got to, you know, don't do this way, do it a modified way. But you know, we don't have to mimic the person on there. You know, you can stop, you can rest. You know, the body's going to tell you if you're pushing it too hard. And unfortunately, you know, for every time you damage a ligament, you're out for weeks at a time. So whatever little exercise you had now becomes starting new.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm sure everyone has been there, too, and they're trying to stay good with their regimen, and all of a sudden they hurt themselves, and yeah. That's some trouble.
Yeah.
And so, Dr. Rasik, how do you stay current with the technologies and new methods of practice? I mean, is it always changing for you?
Well, the technology is coming fast and furious, of course, with the electronic medical record era, with the meaningful use and the Affordable Care Act and all that. So those are either, you know, it's basically they threw you into the swimming pool and you swim or you sink. Unfortunately, it has probably resulted in the exodus of, you know, doctors that have had a lot of experience, maybe were 5 years from retiring, but this is just so overwhelming, it's probably easier for them to leave. And it may ultimately be a bit daunting for someone coming into the field. But I'm sort of a tweener. I still like my mouse, and I still like a piece of paper from time to time. But I've got it's basically adapt or perish. And then as far as the medicine side of it, you know, the patients are bringing me all sorts of diagnoses all the time. You want to make sure you understand what they're taking. You want to understand what they're doing. And so if they're on medications for other than non-cardiac stuff, I want to know why. I want to know what it's for. And it tends to lead me into research and try to keep me up to speed as best I can because all those things can come back and affect what I do for a living. So you know, only almost just by, I mean, I know there's CME courses. There's all sorts of recommendations. But really, a busy practitioner is almost forced to keep up, or they're going to, you know, not be able to take care of the people.
Now, in terms of this, when you're working with a patient and there's something seriously wrong, obviously, or you're trying to figure it out, and you're asking them about their personal habits, do you have a way to figure out if they're, you know, just not telling you everything? Because obviously I know you can ask somebody, hey, how many times do you work out? Are you a smoker? Do you drink? Do you do this or that? And they don't, you know, I could see people not being fully honest about that. Now, are you able to call them out on that bluff if they are to do something like that? Or how do you handle that situation?
Right. So I mean, most of the time, you know, it'll take a visit or two. So they realize that. And I explain to them, I'm not here to judge. I'm not here to tell you. I mean, most of these patients are intelligent. They know that their kids shouldn't smoke. They know that they're overweight. So when I explain to them, I'm here as a partner in your healthcare. I'm not here as your father. I'm not here as your teacher. I'm not here to crack your knuckles with a ruler. You know, I will tell you what you have, why you have it, and what will happen if we don't do this. And it's not... It's not about me. It's not changing my life if they don't get their health in order. It's affecting their lives. So sometimes they need to digest that for a while, and other times it'll be laboratory. If a laboratory shows a patient's drinking, if a laboratory shows that they've got progressive disease in their lungs, you know, I will say, I know you said you barely smoke or you quit, but according to the blood work, this is indicating maybe that's not the case. Is there anything you'd like to tell me? So when sometimes the data calls them out, then they kind of just all spills out.
Sure. So obviously then we want to stress to people that it's the best thing in the world for you to do is just to be honest with your doctor.
Yeah. I mean, I know there's doctors that will fire patients if they don't follow things or get very stern. And I just tell them, you need to be honest. You need to tell me what's going on. And in the end, this is going to affect but you. My life doesn't get shorter when I'm sedentary and you're smoking and eating the wrong food. Yours does. So if you want to be around to enjoy your family, and I'll often have them bring the spouses in or other family members and say, you know, then if it's worth it to you to make them happy, you should probably make your health better. So I think a lot of times it's just, and I've had some very non-compliant patients that it took almost 5 years to get them going, and now
of
they're
course.
Militant. I mean, they're zealots. So mm-hmm. sometimes it's just wearing them down.
Absolutely. And do you find, obviously, you have your patients that you've had for quite some time now, like you said. You've even had some from your father's practice that have carried over to you. Do you find that there is an age for people to still be able to turn things around? I mean, obviously, if they don't turn things around by the time they're a certain age, obviously, you know, okay, after 70, it's tougher to heal. But
right.
is there a specific age for people that want to be, you know, we'll say living on the edge, where they, you know, they don't want to listen to you exactly, and then all of a sudden, you know, they see that it's starting to wear on them? I mean, do you know of a specific age, or do you try to urge people, like, hey, look, you need to kind of focus here?
Well, you know, in one of the misconceptions that young people and probably the public in general have is that you can sort of splurge early on, and then from say 40 to 50, now we need to start paying attention. But
right.
I think most of our data indicates that that's not the case. Some
mm-hmm.
some autopsies from the Korean War and Vietnam, these were 19-year-old kids that had cholesterol plaque building up in them. So really can't say, well, I'm going to stop eating poorly and start exercising at age 50, since that's when the heart attacks
right.
and guys start to pick up. You need to start early and make it a lifestyle. And then later, if it's just a simple matter of weight loss and borderline issues, it's never too late. But by the time you've smoked and you're on oxygen, you know, it's probably a little late. If your blood pressure has not been controlled and your heart is given out, and that's a problem and probably not going to get away on its own. Same with the kidneys. If you're already on dialysis because you've let all these other issues take your kidneys out, it doesn't mean you shouldn't stop because there's other organs at risk. It just means that, you know, you can't. There's no do-over, so you've lost an organ, and the patients
right.
need to know as they're getting laser surgery to their eyes that maybe fixing their diabetes sooner than age 70 would be a good idea.
right, absolutely. And Dr. Asik, now a couple of personal questions about your
sure.
career while we're winding mm-hmm. down to the last few minutes of this particular episode. What do you think sets you apart from other cardiologists or other people in the healthcare industry?
Well, I think the patients do get a sense that I want to connect with them, that if they're coming to be a patient of mine and they're going to be a patient of mine, that they are going to be part of a family. So I will tend to dote over them. I will probably be calling them from time to time and
mm-hmm.
asking them, did they get their test? Did they do this? Do they do that? And it drives my nurses nuts, too, that I will be available on my cell, that I'll be available on my email, and I'm hooked up through my home, so... Probably drives my wife nuts that I'm scanning labs and I'm constantly
sure.
So I think for me, if I see something that's even outside the realm of cardiology that I don't like what I'm seeing and is not being taken care of, that I will take probably the extra steps to either notify or start investigating issues, which sometimes makes my referring guys a little annoyed. But the bottom line is the patient's the consumer. I don't want my mom treated any different than anybody, you know. So if this is my mom sitting in front of a doctor, I would expect him to go the extra mile. So I
sure.
can sense that.
Absolutely. And that would certainly make me feel pretty comfortable to have access to my doctor's cell phone.
Yeah, I mean, you know what?
I know a lot of people don't do that. I know for a fact that there's
no.
not a lot out there.
I've been called crazy for it. But you know what? These patients are very good. I'm almost always only getting called when it's absolutely necessary, and a lot of times not called when I should be. So, you know, occasionally I regret it, but a vast majority of the time I think it makes sense to give them access, because even the patient portals where you can get your own labs is very confusing to get all that raw data. There's
sure.
H's for highs and L's for low, and what does this all mean? And in the end, I think just contributes to a lot of anxiety.
Well, Dr. Asik, I want to thank you for coming on today. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I'm glad to say we do have you coming back on for 4 more episodes, tentatively for next week at the same time, roughly Wednesday at 10 a.m., hopefully. But again, your schedule, if it's a little crazy, we'll work around it. But once more time, why don't you tell everybody how to best reach you via email?
My email is mrasik, R-A-S-A-K, mrasik, at heartdoctors, heartdrs.com.
Perfect. Dr. Rasik, thank you again for coming on today. I think people are in for a real treat with your series here.
Well, great. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.